I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to discuss a new bipartisan group for women in Indiana. It's called Women for Change Indiana. We'll talk about how the group got started, who the members are, and what they hope to accomplish. My guests are two of the founders, Rabbi Sandy Sasso and Jennifer Nelson Williams. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are founders of the organization, Rabbi Sandy Sasso and Jennifer Nelson Williams. Welcome to both of you.
Nice to be here.
It's good to have you both here. So I'll start. Talk to me first a little bit about what Women for Change Indiana is. I'll start with Jennifer on that one.
Women for Change Indiana is a inclusive, nonpartisan group of women who are working to further the rights of women in the state of Indiana. And we formed in November, and Sandy and I are continuously inspired and motivated by the women that have lent their support to us.
Sandy, what was the genesis of starting Women for Change Indiana? What brought it about?
Well, it's really an amazing story. After the November 2016 election, Jennifer and I were talking on the phone, and we were commiserating and were concerned about the direction of the country. And instead of just having coffee together, we decided to hold a meeting, invite a few speakers, and put the announcement of the meeting on Facebook. We expected about 100 people to come. It so happened there were 500 people that came to the meeting and 400 that could not get into the facility. We actually met in Zionsville at the mortuary there, which Jennifer is the director of. And we were stunned, and from that moment, we realized that we had something important to do. We asked all the women to tell us what issues they were most concerned about. We had an incredible group of volunteers who went through all the postcards, and we decided what the four top priorities were, and that's how we all began. We are now almost 13,000 members on Facebook.
How, when you say, there are a couple of questions I want to ask to follow that up, and either one of you can answer. When you say events concerned you and you were concerned about the direction of the country, specifically what events and what can you define what direction of the country that it is concerning you? Either one of you, I notice you're looking at each other. Silence does not work well on the radio.
No. Well, I think that we were both, as women, as mothers, we were concerned about the distasteful rhetoric that had accompanied the election cycle. And we felt that we wanted to explore what that meant for women, especially here in the state of Indiana. So I think that was one of the issues that struck us, that made us feel a sense of grief. We had certainly been hopeful that we may see the first woman elected to president of the United States. But it was more than the disappointment of not seeing that fulfillment. I think it was the feeling that we were vulnerable as women because of the rhetoric. Sandy?
Yes. So I was very active in the women's movement in the 1970s. And as I was listening to the rhetoric that was the political rhetoric at the time, I felt that we were going backwards rather than forwards. And I decided that we couldn't go back. All the things that all the rights and opportunities that we had struggled for seemed to be at risk. We were also very concerned about the hateful rhetoric, particularly toward people on the margins, toward Muslims, toward immigrants, toward handicapped people. And it's interesting that we gathered in a mortuary, but we weren't there to mourn. We were really there to resurrect the values that were very dear to us and we believe are at the core of what it means to be an American democracy.
We're talking about a new group that's formed in Indiana to represent the interests of women. It's called Women for Change Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what our regular listener Jerry has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, "Personally, I think that straight, white, older guys," and he puts in parentheses, "swags, most recently have done great damage to our constitutional republic, and that it is high time that more females exerted greater influence upon our political discourse. Since women constitute just over half, 50.8% of our population, their underrepresentation in our highest national political offices is manifestly unfair. Two of the four biggest parties in the 2016 presidential contest nominated women, so clearly some progress is being made. Just over a third of Democratic U.S. senators are female compared to a mere 11.5% of Republicans. A similar ratio, 39% for Democrats to 11.7% for Republicans, obtains in the House of Representatives. Would your panelists please comment upon and possibly explain this wide discrepancy between the two largest American parties?" Rabbi Sasso.
Well, I'd like to explain first the discrepancy about the number of women that are running based on how many women there are. So nationally, it's about 24% of women are in Congress, although we make up 51% of the population. In the state, women in the state legislature are only 19%, although we make up 51% of the population. So the question is, why is that the case? And there have been a lot of studies regarding this, and the one reason that continues to come up is that women are not asked to run for office. They are as qualified, they are as talented, they are as capable, they are as strong, but they are often not asked. And I think that we are beginning to see a change in that. Men are asked to run, women are not asked to run. Of course, there are other factors as well, but one of the components of Women for Change, and I'll let Jennifer say more about this, is the empowerment of women to run for office. And so we do have a program that is going to educate women who are interested in seeking elected office.
Jennifer, I think that's your cue.
Yes. So on that first meeting, we had the first meeting in November that we had at the mortuary, Christina Hale gave a very inspiring and powerful speech about this very topic. And she highlighted to us present that we only were represented by 19% in the state legislature. And one of the things that she said is that for women, they usually don't run until they are asked, and men feel they're qualified and don't necessarily need to be asked. And so that is the difference. Women typically underestimate their qualifications, and they feel a strong pull for their familial obligations. And so it's not their first thought to run. But there are programs that are arising. So Women for Change, we formed a separate corporation, a 501c3, and it's called Ready to Run Indiana. And we're going to begin offering programming. We're going to begin in September with a two-day program for women to learn about becoming elected officials. And we had a wonderful networking opportunity last week where women could speak to current elected officials and other people from both sides, from both parties, about the constraints and the challenges and the benefits of being an elected official in Indiana.
You make an interesting point here. We did a show on a related theme a few years ago, a couple of years ago, I think, with former Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman and a couple of other female elected officials who made a similar point that part of the problem here is that, and I'm probably going to be grossly oversimplifying the Lieutenant Governor's argument, was that many men will take a look at a list of qualifications or prerequisites and say there are 10 of them. If they can click off one or two, they assume they're qualified mm-hmm. at that point.
Absolutely.
On the opposite, and too many women look at that list and think, well, if I've only got 8,
right.
I'm not qualified. How do you go about changing that mindset?
I think that the dialogue has to change. And if one thing that this election cycle did illustrate for so many people is that anyone can run for office, more people feel that they are not excluded because of their histories.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are hundreds of women who are interested in running or exploring political office possibilities now here in the state of Indiana. It's very exciting. It is a thrilling time to be part of this grassroots movement.
Yeah, I would second that and say it's not only true in politics, but it has been true in other professions, mm-hmm. and women have overcome that. The confidence factor is very interesting. It's said that if men feel 60% qualified for a job, they are totally confident that they can take that job. Women have to feel 100% confident. So in many ways, we've overcome that in other fields like medicine and law, and I think we're beginning to address it in the political process as well. And what's so important, it's not just that women are running for elected office more often, but that when women get into elected office, they address issues that are often neglected. And that is essential. So having women in the legislature is going to affect the quality of life for all of us in our state.
Gotten another email from a listener named Marcia, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Marcia writes, thank you for having these amazing women on your program today. My question has to do with redistricting or gerrymandering. I had learned some statistics at a League of Women's Voter meeting in March about this topic and feel it is increasingly important to Indiana to review the voting districts for everyone. One thing that I found very interesting from the representative from Common Cause is the number of Indiana state legislators who ran unopposed in their district elections, like 44. This year, Milo Smith from Columbus was heading the legislation on redistricting, but never moved it forward out of committee. I can understand how current Republicans would want to stop any and all discussion of redistricting, but it is very important to the entire state. How do we reach voters to educate and provide an understanding of how important this topic is to everyone? My fear is that without strong, strong voter voices, this legislation will never be discussed. Jennifer.
Well, Marcia, you are so right, because this is one of the paramount issues that Women for Change and many other organizations are tackling before the next elections in 2018. There are cases that have come forth in other states that show that gerrymandering, the districting of the state based on different criteria is unlawful, and it is something that is going to be pursued here, that a nonpartisan commission will help draw the lines in the state of Indiana. Sandy, do you have something you'd like to add?
Well, I was just going to give you a statistic that's very telling. So we are Republican Democrats in the state of Indiana, about 56% Republican and 44% Democrat. But that's not how our state Senate looks. There are only 18% Democrats, 9 Democrats and 41 Republicans. So we really do not reflect the voices of our community. And redistricting is one of the primary foci of our Women for Change in this coming year, because we think that will affect a lot of other issues about which we are concerned.
We are talking about Women for Change Indiana with founders of the organization, Rabbi Sandy Sasso and Jennifer Nelson Williams. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Women for Change Indiana. It's a new group that is attempting to engage and involve more women in the public dialogue and in the process of creating public policy. My guests are founders of the organization, Rabbi Sandy Sasso and Jennifer Nelson Williams. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Larry has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing fine. What's on your mind?
First of all, on that gerrymandering comment they just made, most of the Democratic representation in the state, isn't they mostly clumped in the large cities, Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, Gary? And so if they were going to be able to take 50% of the House legislative seats, because they're, 46% Democrats, they'd have to be more spread out throughout the districts of the state. And that's why there was such a representative towards Republicans, because they're more spread out in the different districts and have majorities in the districts. And also this constant refrain of resist and overcome and overthrow the president, it seems like there's been a constant state that a duly elected and fairly elected president needs to be overthrown. And it just seems like their mantra of this is more in the line of what they're calling the Republicans. They constantly call the Republicans fascist, and it seems like to overthrow a duly elected president, that's more in line with fascism on the Democratic side and the protests they've had and attacking people from the left would seem more like the fascists. So I'm kind of confused by this overthrow and resist commentary that keeps coming up on the left.
Let me let them respond to your comments. Thanks very much for the call, Larry.
Well, thank you for allowing us to clarify that Women for Change is not for overthrowing anything. Women for Change is making sure that every citizen has a voice in the democratic process. And in fact, we're not just Democrats. We are independents, Democrats, Republicans. We had a panel of Republicans and Democratic elected officials to talk to women who want to run for office. We are for building coalitions and for finding ways that together we can speak in a civil and effective way to make the changes that we feel are necessary in our government. So we value more than anything, well, I shouldn't say more than anything, but one of our primary values is civility, is to learn how to talk about issues, not attack people, to learn how to have a serious debate about issues. The problem with the way our districts are so designed is that there really aren't any competitive races any longer, because people know that if they're Democrat or Republican, they're just going to get elected because there's no one going to run against them.
Yeah, they worry more about the primary now than the general election. And I want to speak to this question of tone and civility. People, my producers and the folks here, get nervous when I make reference to the fact that I'm not quite as young as springtime anymore. But the reality is that I have been covering politics in one form or another for a long, long time. And this issue of civility or tone has been around, predates Donald Trump by quite a while. I mean, you could trace it back to the Clinton years, certainly. There was a lot of active resistance to Clinton's agenda. Certainly with the second president Bush, that was the case. Same with Obama. I mean, is some of what we need to do now is at least restore some sense of dignity to the public sphere here, because it is, I can't imagine, just myself, and this is the last opinion I promise I will express during the show. I cannot understand why anyone, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, or whatever, would want to run for president these days and be subject to this sort of vitriol, and, you know, to drag his or her family into mm-hmm. the process as well. Jennifer, I see you nodding your head the most emphatically, so I'm going to let you speak to that.
Well, I do think that has deterred many competent people from becoming involved. And so often, even in my own life, people would make remarks, are you going to run for office? And the vast majority of people I would know and consider competent to do so would always say, oh, I would never subject myself to that. And that really doesn't give us the representatives that are potentially the most qualified. Everyone should feel that they are able to do it without having to drag their family members through the dirt like that.
We talked before we went to the break about the four priorities. Civility apparently is one of them.
Yes.
What are the other three?
Well, one is women's health, the dignity and health of women. The second one is inclusion and civility. The third one is encouraging women's empowerment to run for office, educating women to make that possible. And the fourth one, which is our primary focus for this coming year, is redistricting and voter education and civics education.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Christy. Christy writes, after the November meeting, Jennifer also spoke at the local Zionsville group, which later became Boone County Voices for Change. We are not paid protesters, but volunteers who want to see our voices heard and leadership to know there are progressive voices in Indiana. I still remember vividly Jennifer's impassioned talk, and thank her for stepping up to empower women. How large, you said 13,000 people on Facebook. Are there other metrics you're using to track the number of people who are involved now?
Well, we have people that have signed up on our Facebook page, which is our most active participation. And then we have chapters that we're beginning to roll out across the state. So the first chapter, I went to Mishawaka in District 2. Our plan is to have chapters in all the congressional districts and the 9 congressional districts across the state. So we have rolled out District 2, and as we spread throughout the state, our numbers will grow. But right now, it's purely the numbers of people that have joined our effort on our Facebook page.
But an indication might be a large meeting that we had, which we invited everyone's mostly from Central Indiana because we had it here in Indianapolis. But there were 1,500 people that came to the event, and we had to close reservations. So that gives you a sense of the interest that has been generated by this group.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Heather. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can send your email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Heather writes, I'd like to report that I have attended a couple of Women for Change events this year, and I have found them to be nonpartisan, incredibly well-organized, and very informative. Through these meetings and my own recent research, I have learned things about civics and been prompted to think about politics in ways that I was never exposed to or encouraged to do in my formal education. What is Women for Change doing to ensure that future generations of women, puts in parentheses, and men, are better educated about civics? Sandy, I'll start with you.
Well, we have been running a number of programs for civics education and promoting information and books regarding that. We don't yet have any programs for, like, high school students, But we are working together with Sheila C. Kennedy and seeing if we can bring a good civics education into our public schools, because that is one of the biggest problems. We're part of a democracy, but many of us are not educated about how a democracy works. Therefore, it is hard to have our voice heard. I wanted to add just another comment. We keep saying that, you know, this is a woman's organization, mm-hmm. and this is about women's issues. But really, the issues that we are about are human issues. All mm-hmm. these issues affect all of us, men, women, and children. Women's health affects families, the way we speak to one another, the issue of inclusivity, the issue of redistricting. All these factors impact all of us in the state of Indiana. And we as women feel we want to have a more effective voice. We are here to engage, educate, and to envision a better future.
We're talking about Women for Change Indiana, a new organization that aims at empowering and educating women to participate more effectively in the public sphere. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Lynn has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
My question is in regard to early voting in Marion County. You know, this past presidential election in 2016, there was one voting place downtown, not the most accessible for over a million people, whereas the previous election in 2012, I know right in my area of North Central High School, we were able to vote early voting. It was very well attended by a very diverse group of people. In 2016, you know, trust me, Hamilton County, you know, Fishers, you know, they had, you know, at least three different polling places for early voting. So we're a democracy. And as such, I feel that we should make voting easier, not more difficult for people. And, you know, the whole, you know, 6 a.m, 6 p.m, is just not the easiest for, you know, the regular person on a salary, an hourly salary. So just wondering what we can do. I realize that there are, you know, two Democrats, one Republican on the Marion County, whatever, voting committee or whatever, and that they need a unanimous vote in order to make any changes in early voting. That's my understanding. I just wonder what can be done by that.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Lynn. Jennifer.
It's certainly what Lynn says is true. There is a huge deficit in early voting opportunities in Marion County. Indiana has some of the most restrictive voter legislation in the country. I know that Common Cause has been working on this issue. Do you know what happened with that?
No, I think we're still working to see if we can get more voting opportunities, particularly in Marion County. Understand that we also build coalitions. We don't work on our own. Mm-hmm. We are working with Common Cause, the League of Women Voters, in trying to make a difference in that.
I know. I believe they were trying to file some sort of a suit that would maybe push the issue into the front, mm-hmm. The front of people's minds. And I'm not sure what's going on with that, but that is certainly something. It makes it
so
very
difficult.
So I guess
that's a call out to Julia Vaughn. If
yes.
she's listening to this program, she
yes.
should call in and give
yes.
us an update.
And we work with Julia yeah. on that
yes.
as well. I would like to make a proposal. It hasn't gone anywhere. I've tried it in a few other places. We need Election Day to be a federal holiday. Mm-hmm. People need to have off, have the opportunity to go and vote, and not to worry about being late for work or not getting to the voting booth on time.
We have another question from a listener via Facebook. And again, if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Miles writes, how do you bring everyone's focus on the issues that are important to women without having Republicans instantly feel threatened?
You know, we've been working.
Deep sighs here before
deep
everything.
Sighs. No, yeah. I mean, I've been working with Republicans on these issues. The issues that we care about cross lines. The Republicans I've talked to, as well the Democrats, care about civility. They hate the rhetoric that is going around in political circles and all over the country that demeans individuals and people and groups. That is very dangerous. We also join together in believing that we have a strong democracy when all the citizens have a voice in that democracy. So I think there are numerous issues where we can collaborate. Of course, there might be differences among some of us about how we approach issues, but there are differences among Democrats about how we approach issues. We are trying to build coalitions between Democrats and Republicans, and also independents, in order to address the issues and listen to one another so that we can have a serious conversation. Mostly now we talk and we don't listen. We really do not engage in a dialogue, and that is so necessary for the health of our democracy.
We are talking about Women for Change Indiana here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Ray has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ray, welcome to the program.
I wanted to congratulate your panelists for being so articulate about the issues. And it's too bad they're not both in our state legislature right now. I wanted to ask them what issues specifically did they think would cut party lines that would be able to be addressed if they were in the legislature, and also whether they could address conversations, not necessarily always suing, but working with the governor perhaps on the issues that are important to them with the political power they are generating. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Ray. Sandy.
Well, I was going to say redistricting, because the bill was proposed by Jerry Tor, who is a Republican. So I really think that there is a possibility to get bipartisan support for redistricting so that there are fair districts and there are competitive races. And neither party has to go to the extremes in the primaries to get elected, both the Democrats going to the extreme left and the Republicans going to the extreme right. When we have really fair elections, we have robust conversations, dialogues, and debates, and we get the best policy we can get.
Are there other issues, though, that you think might be a way to sort of broaden this more civil public sphere that seems to be the overarching focus of a lot of what you're trying to do here, Jennifer?
We have had a tremendous response from Governor Holcomb, who we met with on his first day in office, about our civility campaign, as well as a very positive response from Speaker Bosma about introducing a civility campaign to the state legislature. So we were very encouraged by both of those responses. And we have a meeting with Senator Long next week. So we really look, I think, both on the redistricting. There's hope for that with Representative Tor, and with the civility. Some of the other issues maybe are a little bit more difficult for people to bridge the divide. But those two certainly, and women getting more involved in politics is something that everyone can agree.
We are talking about Women for Change Indiana. It is a new organization designed to empower, educate, and improve opportunities for women to take part in public discourse and shape and define the public sphere. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Again, we're talking about Women for Change Indiana, a new organization that aims at empowering women here in the Hoosier State. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Women for Change Indiana. It's a new organization that aims at empowering women here in the state and promoting women's issues. My guests are founders Rabbi Sandy Sasso and Jennifer Nelson Williams. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Marnie has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Marnie writes, "One area of opportunity I've always noted on women's issues is early education of historical fact. As an example, my children in elementary school learned about many minorities, such as African American history and Native American history, but I never hear of any topics taught on the women's movement or suffrage. I would think education on these issues would be very relevant. Would love to see that type of agenda pushed forward. Thank you for taking my comment." Marnie, is that part of it that we need to start the educational process earlier about the role of women in our history and society?
Well, I would certainly agree with that. I mean, you know, if we're going to change history, first we have to know some. So we need absolutely to begin the education as early as possible. I mean, when you saw the Women's March, you didn't just see 80-year-old women. You saw women with their children and their teenagers and their middle school children coming together. So it's the beginning of that education. But it does need to be part of our history, so that we can understand where we came from. Because if we didn't understand where we came from, we don't realize what's happened. Many women today, young women today, will say, "Well, I never knew that you couldn't do that as a woman in the 1960s. And it comes as a great surprise. So we need a certain sense of vigilance so that we don't go backwards.
We are talking about Women for Change Indiana here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Ryan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk a little more about demographics and how the Republican Party has seen this trend that, you know, younger generations start as more liberal and more progressive and falling away from the Republican beliefs of conservatism and smaller government. And they've positioned themselves with the way they're making it harder for people to vote. And by gerrymandering, which we talked about, making it harder to get voter ID law, you know, voter IDs, and plus closing driver's branches in order to get those IDs. And everything's pretty much geared towards keeping the African-American vote down, your young people vote suppressed, and so forth, and especially disabled and elderly people, because they don't have the time and the necessary means to get out and get the necessary information they need to get the ID. And another thing that concerns me is we're moving away from paperless voting machines. Like, how can we audit a vote if there's no paper trail? And that's something I would like to see become adopted nationwide, is everybody have a paper ballot, you know, like we have, where you scan it and it gets scanned and so forth. So there's enabled ability for it to be scanned and our votes are counted.
Thanks very much for the call and the question and comments. Jennifer.
Well, as we had discussed earlier, we do have some of the most restrictive voting regulations in the country, and many of those issues that the caller mentioned are certainly make it difficult for people to be able to get to the polls. I was speaking at a meeting in Hancock County, and many of the women there who had worked in the polls mentioned that there was a huge percentage of teenagers that had come to the voting booths in November, and because they had not yet registered to vote or they maybe had moved, they were not able to vote. So we need to get out more information to educate the voting population on how that can be done and really look at those regulations because we have such little public transportation here. It makes it difficult for people, for marginalized citizens to go to the DMV to get their new license if they have not found it. So there are certainly huge obstacles in people's way that make it difficult for them to vote.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Natasha, and our email address is, again, nolimits@wfyi.org. Natasha writes, I applaud the mission of Women for Change. I especially appreciate its bipartisan commitment. What objectives have you set for Women for Change, and how do you plan to meet them? How will you measure your impact and progress? Sandy.
Well, we have a number of goals. I think we would measure progress by more women running for office, an elected office. We would measure progress if we could see a change in the redistricting laws, if we could find a way of increasing civility around the state, and we would also have fewer restrictions about women's health care. Those are all big issues, but I think that we are able to accomplish certainly the one about women running more for office, because we have more and more women, really not just in Indiana, but across the United States, going to education programs to prepare them to, in fact, run for elected office.
Do you have models that, like I'm aware of the Wellstone Center up in Minnesota, which is really kind of a candidate training zone. Mm-hmm. Obviously, more for progressive candidates in the Paul Wellstone tradition. But are there models of what you're trying to do to educate qualified female candidates how to run for office?
There are. Indiana is already blessed with the Lugar series that works to train women to run for office, and that is run by the through the Republican Party, and they select candidates through that, and it's very successful. The group that we have partnered with is Women for Change is Ready to Run. Mm-hmm. And Ready to Run is a nonpartisan group out of Rutgers University that specifically modeled the intentions of Women for Change. And so we see ourselves in our first classes, I mentioned, that we'll be leading in September as a foundational training for women who really don't have any idea. Many of the Women for Change members are newly engaged. And so these are not career politicians or career activists. These are people who have just come to the process very recently. And so our Ready to Run training will be very helpful to them. They may not want to have their name on the ballot, but they may want to be a supporter of another woman who runs or get involved on the community level. I mean, we need people at school boards. We need people in city councils. There's many opportunities for people to become involved.
I wanted to add another indicator of success would be more women who call their legislators and write to their legislators. I think we saw an increase of that in the last state legislative session. So the more people who feel they have a voice and who use that voice would be an indicator that we've done something important in the state.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Women for Change Indiana here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Leanne has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Leanne, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to call in and commend that I appreciate WFYI and NPR. I listen to shows regularly that expand my mind and help me to think in ways that I didn't before. And just listening to your show today, one of the things that I have tried to do after listening to programs is try and find common ground with people that, across party lines, maybe we don't agree on many things, but I've always I'm trying to learn to say things to find common ground that we both would find valuable for that our legislatures could be working towards. And one of the things that I find so frustrating, and I was wondering if your group could talk about what they're doing to help, is that I just find so many people aren't really civically engaged and understand the issues. They don't have like a good source of reliable information that they're getting their story from, their media that they may be listening to, is just not, it's not factual. So they come off with sound bites and stories that aren't something that you can even try and have an intelligent conversation about because it's not true. And, you know, I feel like sometimes NPR might be pegged as a liberal media show, but I disagree strongly, and I've listened to differing opinions, and pretty much any time there's a panel, there's people from both sides talking that are, you know, giving different perspectives. So I guess what I'm looking for is in this, you know, public discourse is that someone try and point out regularly, you know, who's the good media source that you can read or listen to and get facts, and who's not good, and start making it, you know, as we've found out in this past year, fake news can really have a bearing on what people believe to be true. So, you know, what can we do about making sure people are really getting their information from a reliable source?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Leanne, and thank you even more for listening to WFYI.
Sure.
Well, I think that's a real challenge, and we have seen that over and over in the past few years, that this is a problem for people. There are fact checkers. There's Snopes.com. There's other sources that I'm unaware of. But I think this conversation, the more you put a face to the issues, the more you engage in conversations with one another, I think it just starts to build the bridge between the issues. What would you add, Sandy?
Yeah, I would say that we are trying to help in that process by running educational programs on each of the issues that I mentioned. So just last night, there was an education program with IUPUI and the Desmond Tutu Center and Women for Change on immigration. And we heard speakers about Asian immigration, the Muslim ban on immigration, and Mexican immigration. So we're trying to have continual educational programs. We had one on civics, and we're going to have one again with experts in the field, and if there's a controversy, with hearing both sides. So I hope you'll look on our website, Women for Change Indiana, four with a number, and you will see programs coming up throughout the year that whose purpose is to give you information, facts, and what you need in order to have a voice in the system.
We're talking about Women for Change Indiana here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Michelle has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Certainly. And kudos to the ladies and whoever else is involved with Women for Change in Indiana. My issue is we talked about gerrymandering and that sort of thing, but another issue that I have is campaign financing, which is kind of an elephant in the room and nobody talks about it, I think, but I think is vital to having our election actually representing the constituents that they're supposed to. What do you ladies think?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sandy, I'll throw that one to you first.
Well, I agree with you. Absolutely. It's a serious issue, and it's actually particularly an issue for women because raising that amount of funds, since they haven't had that experience, becomes more difficult. It's an issue. We have yet to tackle it, but you have to understand we are less than a year old, and we're in the process of focusing on particular concerns that we think we can make a difference in. But this certainly is one that is important to address. It's crucial for the future of our democracy.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Ben, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, regardless of what issues mattered most to voters this past election, we watched the Republican frontrunner belittle female candidates, veterans, religions, and ethnic minorities, and the disabled. To elect that man into office is a tacit endorsement of his behavior, which in itself is alarming. If nothing else, it signals that we do not place individual rights and dignity with the utmost importance. I was particularly surprised by the number of female voters who voted for Trump and defended his behavior. I understand that Hillary Clinton's gender should not automatically give her the female vote, but it seemed as though her qualifications and her honesty vastly surpassed Trump's. I wonder if your panel has observed any shift in behavior from the female voting populace. Jennifer.
Well, I mean, there are certainly many people much more qualified than I to discuss the state of the election. But one of the things that I can testify to is that this election has engaged more people in Indiana, more women specifically, who are becoming more informed every day through our group and our educational seminars and through the news and through other groups that are active within Indiana, Common Cause, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU. All of these groups have seen an uptick in involvement and engagement. And so regardless of the outcome of the election, this is certainly the time of the woman here in Indiana. There are hundreds and hundreds of women who are using their voice, and many for the first time, to become engaged.
Do you think we're going to see an upswing in the number of female candidates for state and federal office? I mean, we got another election next year. I think you'd mentioned that's one of the metrics you're looking at for Women for Change Indiana's effectiveness. Are you seeing signs? Are you hearing from people that they plan to run? You're both sort of nodding.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. We are hearing people. I wanted to respond to your last caller also. What we need to pay attention to is what brought people to vote for Trump despite his hateful rhetoric about women and minorities, about races, about religions. There obviously was some deep pain and feeling of disenfranchisement that led people, despite what was going on, to vote. So if we are going to move to another election in which we have candidates who speak with dignity and respect, we need also to address those people. We have to address the whole populace of the state and understand the concerns, the different concerns that different constituencies have.
We're almost out of time here. So real quickly, Jennifer, if listeners want to learn more about Women for Change Indiana or become involved, where do they go to find the information?
Well, they can go to womenfor4changeindiana.org or visit us on our Facebook page, Women for Change Indiana.
Thank you both very much for what has been a lively and informative conversation. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.